get ready.
Man, I don't ever want to be so woke that me and the KKK are out here agreeing on the same shit. Before they were killing people to keep us from voting, now we talk ourselves out of the shit.
For real talk.
Before you get out here live wrong talking about minimum wages and starter jobs, educate yourself on why the minimum wage was created in the first damn place.
All the time.
You shouldn't be the same person you was 10 years ago. You should be growing towards a better you every day. And the only ones who will be threatened by that are the ones who refuse to grow and are scared their ass gonna get left behind.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Sit back and let the beat ride a little bit. Let a motherfucker hear what it's supposed to sound like, you dig? Yeah, I'm from around the way. I slung about an ounce a day. I'm living proof you ain't got no excuse. If it was there, it ain't shit to lose. Them older cats with chunkin' nigga fronts. We'd rock it up and smoke that shit in blunts. For tennis shoes, we was getting fools. We caught you slipping, we would get at you. With no respect, fuck a nigga set. We shot it up and murdered his connects. Was yours is mine for a dollar sign. I blame the grind, I was out of line. I'm reminiscing on what niggas did. For big rewards, you took a bigger risk. They say what comes around will go around. And when you least expect it, shit be going down.
Gotta get it how I live. That's how the streets raise me. And for that paper, most niggas do.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 247 of the report. And right now, we're rocking out to some Scarface off of that Deeply Rooted album, Anything. Rock out with your boy.
They knew all about the stand spot. Knew where the money was and cashed out. You got the nerve to act like you don't know. When all the while, you steady getting more. Just remember, dude, we watching you. I spared your life the day they shot at you. Cause if I didn't, they was coming back to finish off your ass. You were walking dead, it's a fact. You slimy niggas play the game wrong. Your block can't do their time, so they sang songs. I turned the game on, watch the Knicks play. I sent them shotguns at your ass cause you bitch made, nigga.
Gotta get it how I live.
Yes, indeed, y'all. It is a Friday night. The weekend has begun. Avengers Endgame weekend is upon us, man. People have already seen that shit Thursday. I've seen people complaining about spoilers already. I've been lucky enough to have some considerate motherfuckers in my friends list who, of those who have seen it, have not exactly given away spoilers. Like, yo, it's the greatest shit I ever seen, which is something that I think is credible. I think it's credible. And I can't wait to see that shit because I'm going to see that shit tonight. This is part of the reason why you're getting this podcast right now, because we're going to see Avengers Endgame tonight. All right. But let me turn this down here. And let's go ahead and turn that off, Scarface. I mean, I ain't rocked those Scarface in quite some time, man. Real talk. But again, that was, what's that? I think that was on that Deeply Rooted album. Yeah, man. That shit kind of goes. But. Yeah, man, it is episode 247 of the Span Report Podcast, and before we get into anything, Span Report related. Let me let you guys know how to get in touch with us over here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, I will play those messages here on the show and respond to you right here on the show. And if you're watching the show live and you decide you want to call in, guess what? You can chop up with us right here on the show as well. So call that hotline, area code 313-288-0485. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. You can leave those emails here live on the show. We will read those here on the show. And of course, yeah, man, that's one way of getting in and getting your voice heard right here on the Span Report Podcast Network. Also, follow your boy Span on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead, follow me there. Chop it up with your man throughout the week on iTunes. And I'm sorry, not iTunes. Jesus Christ, man, you're moving too fast. It's Instagram and the Twitter streets, man. Real talk. Go ahead and follow your boy Span at Mr_Span. I'm just discombobulated. But yeah, at Mr_Span, man, real talk. Also, leave me those 5-star reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Those 5-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. It's one way to put down for the show. It lets everybody know why you're messing with us over here at the Span Report Podcast Network. And it doesn't cost you a dime, just 2 minutes of your time. And it really does help the show grow. It passes the word around and it helps us go up those, what they call it, those iTunes, like ratings, algorithm, however the fuck they do things over there on at Apple and iTunes. But yeah, man, it does help the show grow. We really do appreciate everybody who leaves those 5-star reviews. Those are the ones that get read here live on the show. And for all of your Span Report needs, you can go to www.thespanreport.com. You can go there, watch replays of the show. You can actually watch the show live from over there at the website. You can leave comments there. You can donate to the show as often as you like, as much as you like. And, of course, we appreciate every dime over here at the Span Report Podcast Network, man. It really does help. Every little bit helps over here at the Span Report Podcast Network because none of this shit is free, man. None of this shit is free. So, yeah, man, we really do appreciate everybody who does that. You can go vote in those polls, watch replays of those shows. Y'all heard me say that already, and I said it again. But, yeah, you can go there to the Span Report Podcast. And go to visit our store, too, man. Our store has merchandise available for you guys, T-shirts, hoodies, and the whole nine, man. We really do appreciate everybody who does that as well, man. That's one way to show your patronage for the Span Report Podcast, and it does help us here tremendously when you do that. So, yeah, man, it is Friday, May 26th. My aunt just celebrated her 50th birthday. My aunt Elena, 50th birthday. 50 never looked better on anybody else. TT, I love you. And yeah, man, she did it. She did it big yesterday, and I'm proud of her and everything like that, man. But yes, again, this is Avengers Endgame weekend, and then we gonna like have some more Game of Thrones happening. Oh man, yes, I took a half day. I got a half day at work, Tanisha. Yeah, but it's a lot going on this weekend, man. Like I said, we get Avengers Endgame, going to check that out, and we also get Game of Thrones, man. We are some lucky motherfuckers, man. Real talk, we live in an age where like the content consumption of the things that we can, man, we got access to a whole lot of good shit, man. All lot of this, man. Listen, man. I said May. Oh damn, I meant April. I'm all over the place. Maybe. We can contribute. This might have been contributing to your man's fan screwing up the dates. It's April 26th, not May 26th. Thank you so much, Tanisha, for that that correction. Hold on a second. So check this out. I'm swigging a little bit. I got some Crown Royal Peach popping off right now, and it's a strategic reason for that. And the reason for that is because again, we are going to see Avengers Endgame tonight. And I have been privy to the fact that this movie is 3 hours long. And I am of the beer variety. Your man Span loves him a nice, good, cold brew. And I tend to swig them boys down kind of like water. And the only thing about that, though, is when you do that, you tend to have to go to the bathroom quite a bit. And I'm not trying to miss a damn thing when it comes to this movie. So I'm trying to curtail my my beer consumption somewhat, so that I can watch and enjoy thoroughly this film that we are about to partake in, this cultural event that is Avengers Endgame. I'm just saying, this has been a long time coming, and your man Span is excited. And yeah, but thank you in the chat for letting your boy know. Yeah, nigga, it is not fucking May 26th. You be peeing every 10 minutes. No, I'm not gonna be peeing every 10 minutes. I swear, trust me, I would hate to be that guy. Oh, I swear I would hate to be that guy. I would hate to be sitting behind that guy or sitting in the same row with that guy where he's always got to get up and we going to the theater with the reclining seats and shit. And you got to be like, hey, man, excuse me, pardon me, excuse me, pardon me. Nah, man, I ain't trying to do none of that. I ain't trying to do none of that. But, yeah. Oh, man, I'm having a good time already. And the show ain't even really kicked off. But we are going to kick the show off. We're going to hop right into the news, y'all. All right. In the news, we've got a few things that have kind of happened on the national presidential scale. So we're going to kind of focus a little, you know, quite a bit on that tonight on the show. And we're going to kick this off with former Vice President of these United States of America, Joe Biden, has finally thrown his hat into the ring for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2020. Right, we're reading a story here out of WXYZ.com here in Detroit. It says former Vice President Joe Biden had a conversation with Anita Hill in which he shared his regret for what he endured during the 1991 hearings for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, his campaign revealed Thursday. In an interview with the New York Times on Wednesday, Hill declined to call the conversation an apology and said she thinks Biden fails to grasp the damage he did to her and other victims of sexual harassment. I cannot be satisfied by simply saying I'm sorry for what happened to you, she told the Times. I will be satisfied when I know there is real change and real accountability and real purpose. Biden oversaw then Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas's confirmation hearings, during which Hill testified that Thomas had sexually harassed her. Biden has faced criticism for years over his handling of Hill's hearing as Senate Judiciary Committee chairman in 1991, when Hill faced intense and probing questions about her accusations against Thomas from the panel of senators. The episode has cast shadows over Biden's long-expected 2020 bid that he formally announced Thursday morning. When Brianna Keller asked on CNN Right Now whether Biden had privately apologized to Hill, Biden's deputy campaign manager, Kate Bedingfield, replied, "So I'm not going to get into their private discussions, but they have spoken." When pressed on details, Biden feels declined to specify when they spoke and whether Biden has apologized, stressing that the conversation was a private discussion. Now, the part of the reason why I'm even bringing this up is because, for one, Joe Biden has been leading in the polls for the Democratic nomination so far, before even announcing that he was going to be in the running. Now, I've known Joe Biden was going to be running for president for quite some time. I think around 2017, I went on Facebook with like, yeah, Joe Biden running for president. Like, that's going to happen. I remember seeing some shit on MSNBC where they did this like glowing ass, you know, profile on Joe Biden. And it was kind of set up in a way where, you know, it was like a pro, like, you know, yeah, this is, we want to glow him up. We want to talk about all of his accomplishments. We want to talk about, you know, the things that he endured as a man and as a young husband and as a young senator and all these things and how he raised his family and how he was traveling back and forth from Washington, D.C. to Pennsylvania and all these things. And he was doing it on the train and stuff. And I remember in 2017, like, yeah, Joe Biden's running for president. But also, I'm privy to the fact that Joe Biden has had this heavyweight around his neck, this albatross across his neck, for the way in which he handled the Anita Hill situation concerning Clarence Thomas when he was running for, I'm sorry, when he was being confirmed for the Supreme Court. Now, at the time, your man Span was like maybe 10 or 11. I remember those hearings only so much. I can remember even people who weren't necessarily Republicans and weren't necessarily conservatives at the time being upset with Anita Hill because they, for one, they thought that she was bringing a good black man down. I remember hearing statements like that even then. And so, you know, one, it just kind of shows how much things have changed over the course of, you know, the years where, like, here we are 28 years later, I believe. Yeah, 28 years later, where, you know, some of those same people are looking at Joe Biden like, man, I can't believe you did that shit the way that you did. Although some of those people were perfectly okay with the way things were handled back then. Now, that's not to say, but people evolve. I mean, the times change. I know we've done that here, right here on the show. But it's like that changed. There has definitely be a sea change in how we look at sexual harassment, how we deal with that, how we hold people responsible for that. So, yeah, man, like it's going to be interesting to see, especially with the reputation that Joe Biden has, not only for how he handled that, but for the way in which he has been kind of, you know, touchy-feely, handsy with the women, you know, making women feel uncomfortable in his presence, you know, being real close, kind of touching, kind of sniffing the hair and the whole nine. People are uncomfortable with that, right? And so one of the things that I thought was very interesting is the fact that, like, you know, we're living in a time of Me Too. We're living in a time where women are being empowered to express themselves, to tell people, yo, this particular interaction or this this conversation, this contact, this physical contact is, you know, this invasion of my personal space, it makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, it's as if it's twofold, right? So you've got people who have for years said that women should be able to say how they feel, to express how someone is making them uncomfortable. And yet when they do that, some of those people also like, well, why are you bringing it up now? They don't like it when it's inconvenient for whatever it is that they like or whatever it is that they got going. If these women come out and say anything, if it's inconvenient for the moment, then they're not really trying to hear it. But this is something that Joe Biden is going to have to deal with. Now, the question that I have to, you know, I have for a lot of folks, I mean, I know Joe Biden supposedly appeals to a lot of, you know, Republican leaning or kind of moderate Democrats who, you know, truth be told, the people who thought it may be palatable for, you know, to vote for Donald Trump, they're okay with the Joe Biden somewhat. Like, they, you know, it is something about that. I think that's part of the reason why Joe Biden is leading in polls, not because of the largest contingent of the Democratic Party caucus, black women, because black women right now ain't feeling Joe. They just ain't feeling Joe at all. And I mean, I guess, you know, rightfully so. Like, they got some misgivings about how that particular situation was handled, and they don't have to let go of that. They really don't. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Joe Biden navigates that going forward in the campaign, because it's early in the campaign. And there are 20 fucking Democratic nominees right now, 20 of them. Some of these people I have never heard of, but they're running for president. Some of it's two mayors right now running for president, the Pete Buttigieg dude. And there's another guy who's a black dude, I think, out of Florida. I don't know his name right off the top of my head, but, yeah, man, it's a really wide field of candidates that are running. And so it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be really interesting to see whether or not Joe Biden is going to be able to navigate that successfully to win the nomination, so to speak. Now, the other thing that I thought was interesting, and I think Joe Biden and his campaign were very calculated in this hire, is the fact that they went out and they got Simone Sanders, formerly of the Bernie Sanders camp. She was a campaign spokesperson for Bernie Sanders when he ran in 2016. She is now on the Joe Biden ticket. And I saw it, like, as soon as he made that announcement, as soon as that announcement was made official, that black women were not biting at all. And a lot of them felt like that particular hire was to kind of head off the criticism that he would get for the way in which he handled the Anita Hill situation. Bottom line, he's going to have to deal with that. He's definitely going to have to deal with that. I think that's the biggest impediment to Joe Biden right now, notwithstanding his stance on the crime bill, you know, back in 94. I think that that's going to be relitigated again. But his problem with black women, Joe Biden's really going to have to deal with that if he's going to have any sort of success in winning the Democratic nomination for president of the United States in 2020. But yeah, that is in the news. The other thing that's in the news, and this is another, another presidential kind of story that I thought was very interesting, and this is part of the reason why this particular episode is named the way that it is, because Elizabeth Warren then said, yo, we need to get rid of this student loan debt, and we're going to wipe out up to 95% of the student loan debt of all of the Americans that went to college and got student loans. I think that's, yeah, what she said. All right. right, we're going to read this story here. This comes out of NPR.org, and it says that Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has issued another big policy proposal as part of her campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2020. This one concerns higher education. Warren proposes that the federal government write off hundreds of billions of dollars in existing student loan debt. The amount of debt that would be eligible for forgiveness would vary by income, but an independent expert analysis submitted as part of her plan suggests that 3/4 of households would see all of their federal student loans forgiven. In addition, the analysis notes that getting rid of this debt would reduce the racial wealth gap. The debt cancellation plan, according to her post on Medium, cancels $50,000 in student loan debt for every person with household income under $100,000 and provides substantial debt cancellation for every person with household incomes between $100,000 and $250,000. Beyond the student debt plan, Warren calls for the elimination eliminating tuition at all public 2- and 4-year colleges, an idea introduced by Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont in the 2016 presidential race. She would also create a fund of at least $50 billion specifically for historically black colleges and universities and would cut off all federal subsidies to for-profit college sector, which has been roiled by various scandals and large-scale closures in the past decade. The projected total price tag, $1.25 trillion over 10 years. Warren says it would be paid for by the new tax on multimillionaires and at least partially offset by new economic growth. Federal agencies have calculated in the past that the current $1.5 trillion of outstanding student loans could be impacting consumer spending and demand for mortgages, so canceling many of these loans would indeed goose the economy. Now, oh man, I've had some thoughts on this for quite a while, man. As someone who has student loans that I am still paying, and also my wife has student loans that we're dealing with, yeah, this is something that greatly it impacts this household, and I'm sure it impacts a whole lot of other households as well. So interestingly enough, I got hit up on Facebook. A sister hit me up on Facebook, and she was kind of pissed. She thought, you know, she has the idea that this could inadvertently affect or disproportionately affect black women in a negative way. Especially when it comes to whether or not black women choose to marry, you know, going for, you know, when you start talking about, you know, the combined incomes or the income of a, you know, of a certain household, if it exceeds the thresholds for said cancellation of the debt or whatnot, right? You know, because if you're making over $250,000, if you and both your husband and yourself, I guess if you combine both of those incomes of over $250,000, then you would not be eligible for any sort of student loan debt, you know, cancellation, so to speak. Now, I'm of the we kind of sit in between the $100,000 to $250,000 range. I've gotten my student loans down to a little bit under $10,000. My wife went to school a hell of a lot longer than I did, went to grad school and everything else. Her student loan debt is a bit more, you know, a little bit more than mine is what I'm trying to say. It's substantial. You know what I'm saying? And so this is something that we talk about. This is something that we deal with, especially come tax time. You know what I'm saying? We're trying to figure out how we're going to do this. But one of the things that I thought was very interesting is the fact that, you know, they talk about the need for you know, the for-profit colleges being eliminated. I think this is something that should have been eliminated a long time ago. I think a lot of student loans going to those private schools like DeVry. I went to a private, for-profit college at one point. I went to Westwood College of Technology for graphic design and shit years ago. I paid that student loan off like 2 years ago, and I was happiest in the world to be done with that bullshit. But the need to eliminate the for-profit colleges or federal funding for that, I believe, will help tremendously. And it's funny, the Trump administration has been kind of rolling back some of the regulations that the Obama administration had put forth when they took a lot of that federal funding from those schools, who were pretty much just kind of like gaming both the student and the federal government by inflating the cost of their school, you know, of their tuition and cost, or, you know, school or whatever, right? One of the things I was thinking about, right, because, you know, when we talk about the cancellation, we talk about the cancellation of this debt, and I was kind of observing some of the ways in which people were talking about the people who took out student loans. You got a lot of people who resent the fact that there could be students who took out student loans who may have those debts canceled, right? Because I saw a lot of, well, shit, I had to struggle to pay off my student loans. This is a slap in the face to me because I scrimped and I saved and I was responsible and I paid off my student loan. And here you guys go, you're bailing out these irresponsible people. And like, it's this idea that if you're having trouble paying for a student loan, then somehow it's a character flaw on your part. Not that you can't find sufficient, you know, employment that pays you a living wage or sufficient wage to where it can cover the bills, cover your living expenses, cover, you know, you sustaining your body, you know, with food and everything else, great, you know, good medical care or whatnot. A lot of the people who say that they paid off their loans, congratulations. Because I know it's not an easy motherfucking thing to do. I'm doing it now. It's not easy. I'm on a graduated motherfucking payment plan. That shit goes up every 6 months. And it's not good, man. I'd be like, God damn, I'd be glad when it's over, right? But it's the idea that, you know, they're getting something that you aren't able to take advantage of. And so therefore, because you aren't able to take advantage of it, therefore, nobody should be able to take advantage of it, right? I saw an article out of the Washington Examiner that said it would be a slap in the face to anybody who ever had to pay a student loan off to give any sort of student loan relief or to cancel that debt because you had to pay it off. Check this out, man. There is progress in the way that we do things, and it's always been that way from the beginning of time, right? Can you imagine how pissed off somebody would be or could be if they found out that they was driving on cobblestone roads and horse-drawn carriages and you got this motherfucking highway that you drive back and forth to work on every day and you don't even have to feed a horse to get back and forth to work? You know how motherfucking upset they could be if they saw that? You know what I'm saying? You know how upset people could be if you can walk around with a computer in your pocket and they had to be tied to that computer in their house if they had any work to do? Can you imagine? Can you imagine how pissed off they could be? Where, like, you could watch your house from your phone at work and wait or watch your packages being delivered or being tied down. Like, well, you know, the cable man did say he was going to come between, you know, 2 and 6 o'clock. I guess I got to be home between 2 and 6 o'clock to let somebody know we going to be there, this, that, and other. It's like things progress in a way that you may not necessarily be able to take advantage of it, but that doesn't mean that going forward that nobody else should be able to have that privilege. Like, one of the things, and I know this is something that I sometimes get, you know, a bit irrational. I'm saying you guys are being a bit irrational because I know this is the one thing that I'm a bit irrational about is that anytime that I hear about an advancement in cancer treatments, especially breast cancer treatments, anytime I hear about an advancement in that, and it's saving so many lives, I get upset because my mother wasn't able to benefit from that. And my mother lost her life at 37 years old. And I get a little bit upset at that. But that doesn't mean that because my mom died at 37, that somebody else should lose their mom at 37. It just never really made sense to me, like, why people were upset in that way. That she would even present this. And it's like, okay, so she's offering these free college and free student loans. You know, the Democrats always giving these freebies. Yeah, freebies to open up monies for them to do what? Buy homes? Raise children? You know, the conservatives are always talking about, you know, you need to be married and raise children and single homes and everything else. Here's an opportunity for people to not be single anymore to go ahead and tie that knot, go ahead and buy that house because they got the money to do so. And you're upset at that. Pick a struggle. Right? And so it's been real interesting to kind of watch how this proposal has kind of played out and how people are reacting to it. Because truth be told, man, like, I'm like, yo, go ahead and do it. And then on top of that, another thing too, somebody said, and I believe it was the same sister who told me she thought there would be some issues concerning black women or being disproportionately affected by this, because if they get married, there may be a penalty to that. The other point that she was making was the fact that she thought that this would totally decimate HBCUs. And one of the things that they say in the plan is that the plan would also include, well, I mean, let me make sure I'm reading this correctly. Yeah, it says that the plan would, she would also create a fund of at least $50 billion specifically for historically black colleges and universities, and would cut off all federal subsidies to the for-profit college sector, which have been roiled by various scandals and large-scale closures in the past decade. Like, look, if I could have went to Tennessee State University for free when I went, which is also an HBCU, trust and believe I would. Trust and believe I would have gone for free. I love TSU. Straight up, I would have gone for free. I would have been cool. Back when I was going to Tennessee State, I enrolled at Tennessee State the fall of 1999, right? Rolled there. And at the time, with all the fees, you know, because you had to buy a meal plan, I had to live on campus as a freshman. And this is before you put in my scholarship, my academic scholarship to go there. I was paying a little bit under $9,800 a year to go to Tennessee State University. This was back in 1999. It was about a little bit under $10,000, about $9,800 a year to go to Tennessee State University. So I did a little bit digging because I wanted to see how much it would cost a kid to go to Tennessee State University now in a year, right? And in a year, if you were to enroll, if my daughter was to enroll in Tennessee State University this fall and she went for 1 year, the cost of that would be $21,899. That's up over 100%, man. That's double. That's more than double what I was paying when I went to college, right? Now, I'm still paying back my student loans. I'm still paying that stuff back. My daughter would probably have to take out some loans in order to go to school, right? Hopefully not. My baby would get, some scholarships and whatnot, kind of like Pops did. And, we can mitigate some of those costs and whatnot. If she decides she wants to go to school out of state and whatnot, I got an out-of-state scholarship waiver because of my academic thing. But yeah, man, like the cost of the educations are costing more and more and more all the time. So these kids are being saddled with all of this debt and the cost of education is skyrocketing, right? It's skyrocketing. And one of the things I think is really fucked up is how we prove, like, is how we kind of like push a lot of these kids to go to college, right? Technical skill, vocational skills have been de-emphasized for so long that a lot of kids don't even look at a job like the one that I have. I'm a pipe fitter now. I went to college, but I'm a pipe fitter now. They wouldn't even consider that a thing. Wouldn't even consider it a thing because, hey, man, you do what? You get dirty like that for what? Like, they couldn't pay me enough to do that. We've told these kids that you got to go get you a college degree or you ain't shit. We sold that for so long. We drilled that into a lot of kids' heads. And then they go to college. They go to these schools. Sometimes they can't afford, sometimes they don't get the scholarship. Sometimes they got to take out the loan to go to the school that they really want to go to, right? They take out this loan. They take out this debt. They go to school, they graduate, right? Now, we've promised these kids that they're going to get these jobs. These jobs are going to pay them six figures. And, they're on the road to success. They're on the road to the middle class. But if all they got to do is go to school, get their education, and apply themselves, and you too will be able to work and have, you're going to have a big house. You're going to have a nice car. All these things. We sold these to, I was one of those kids. That idea was sold to me. I bought into that shit. Hook, line, and sinker. Right? And then I got out of college and life hit my ass. For real. I was working at Little Caesars making $6 an hour. College educated dude working at Little Caesars feeling like, man, this can't be all there is for me. Right? Those jobs just weren't falling out of the sky for me. None of that shit was happening. But we've sold this idea to these kids that they got to go to college in order to be somebody, in order to live comfortably. And then when they don't get those jobs, when they're still living at home with their parents, when they're still the kids still, we had Obamacare. So now your kids can stay on your insurance until they're 26 years old. Some of them are still living at home because why? They got this job, but they can't really afford to live on their own. Why? Because we don't really want to pay motherfuckers a living wage. So you got this. It's like you done sold these kids this fucking pipe dream. You done sold these kids this pipe dream. Some of them. I mean, it's not to say that none of these kids, you know, never succeed, go to college and are very successful and everything else. But a lot of them aren't. A lot of them aren't. Some of them would have very well benefited from having some sort of vocational or technical training to go right into the workforce and to start their careers early. They may even be able to retire earlier if they'd have gotten right in while they were in high school even. Hey, I know people at my company right now. They started working there. They were like 17, 18 years old. Right? By the time they're like 40, they got 25, 30 years in the damn company. You know what I'm saying? They could retire at 55. I sometimes wish that somebody had told me the kind of money that could be made working in the field that I work in when I was 17, 18. And I hadn't been sold that dream of, well, I could do all this if only I go to college and I accumulate this debt to go there. Right? Now, that's not to say that I don't, you know, that I regret going to college. I love my college experience. I love Tennessee State University to my heart. Right. But at the same time, man, we've sold this idea to these kids that this is all they have to do. And then we on top of that, the cost of going to the schools have skyrocketed. And so guess what? They have to take out more money and more money just to be able to afford to go to these schools. Then they get out of these schools and now they got all this tremendous debt and you're wondering why your kid living in the basement and can't leave. You're wondering why, like, you know, they're not paying their student loans because I did. Yeah, you probably had a $5,000 student loan. Your kid's sitting on $30,000 in debt. So it's just real. It's just like, it's amazing. It's amazing some of the responses that I've seen to the student loan program, man. I think it's a winner. I think this is one policy proposal that would really make people pay attention to Elizabeth Warren. It's funny. Elizabeth Warren was a darling of the Democratic Party in 2016. She's kind of faded to the background a little bit. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that she, you know, she talks up her alleged, you know, Native American heritage and everything else. And Donald Trump has been able to kind of mock her with a lot of that. But yo, man. If it was, of course, if Elizabeth Warren, if it was between Elizabeth Warren and Donald Trump, like Elizabeth Warren, hello. But yeah, man, like I think this is one particular issue where the policy has been kind of laid out. It's not just a promise. You can kind of see how it gets paid out. And then on top of that, we talk about, you know, that's another thing too that I think is very interesting. We always talk about this shit. Every time somebody says that we're going to do something like this for the vast majority of people, the first thing they say is, well, how are we going to pay for it? Right? We spend that kind of money on our motherfucking military every year. Every year the military gets that kind of money. The military, the Pentagon be like, yo, we really don't need all this shit. Like, truth be told, we kind of all right. You know what I'm saying? Do we really need these damn bombers? We don't even fight wars like that no more. But y'all want to give us these fighter jets? All right, I guess so. You know, we got these drones and shit now. We don't even put people in the goddamn planes no more to go drop bombs. We just send a little robot over there and boom, you know, kill people from right in the damn living room. It's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, man, Elizabeth Warren said she wants to eliminate that college debt. And I'm all for it, man. I got that shit under $10,000. Yeah, man, go ahead and, like, wipe that shit clean. The only thing about it, though, the only thing I got a problem with, though, like, yo, that's that is the one account on my credit report that is the longest. I didn't have that motherfucker the longest. It's going to fuck with my credit age, man. It's going to fuck with my average age of accounts, man. I don't know. But yeah, man, that is in the news. That is in the news. The other thing that's in the news that I kind of wanted to talk about, and I think this is very important. We've talked about this here on the show before. But down in Florida, man, they are acting a motherfucking fool. And I guess I can't be really surprised because it is Florida. I mean, I hear good things about Florida sometimes, but then, you know, I look politically and I'd be like, God damn, man, Florida's a goddamn backwards ass state. But yeah, so the Florida House has passed a bill requiring former felons to pay before they're allowed to vote. And all I can say is that just sounds like,
oh man, hey, 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 hey.
Yes, sir. So check this out, man. Back in November, there was a ballot measure that the people of Florida voted on to give former felons the right to vote in that state because they have been, you know, of course, they've been largely disenfranchised. And Republicans have been against this particular thing for quite some time. And so the Republican legislature has found a way or tried to find a way to disenfranchise those felons again or former felons again by making them pay basically a poll tax, which was, again, another way to keep people from voting back in, you know, back before the Voting Rights Act was passed back in 1964. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of Axios.com. It says that Florida's GOP-controlled House passed a measure along party lines on Wednesday requiring former felons to pay fees and fines before having their voting rights restored, resulting in backlash from voter rights advocates who say it undermines a voter-approved constitutional amendment that allows an estimated 1.4 million former felons to vote again. Details. It says the measure now in the Senate calls for court fines, fees, and restitution to be paid before ex-felons who completed their sentences can vote. According to the Miami Herald, the Senate's version of the bill only requires restitution to be paid, but not court fees and fines if those have been converted to a civil lien, which happens often. Nonetheless, any restrictions would prevent thousands from voting. After Floridians overwhelmingly approved the constitutional amendment last year, only Iowa and Kentucky remain as states that permanently prohibit ex-felons from voting unless the governors of those states approves a clemency plea. The ballot measure, which took effect in January, did not apply to those convicted of murder or sex crimes. State Republican lawmakers quickly proposed measures they would argue provide clarification because ex-felons should repay all fines and fees connected to their sentences. Voting rights advocates labeled the measure a modern-day poll tax, a reference to the fees used to keep Black Americans from voting in the South during the Jim Crow era. So, again, you know, for those of you who may be conservative who listen to my show, like, hey, man, I'm just trying to understand, like, why y'all like that? Like, why y'all like that? Like, why y'all be having Candace Owens out here, like, talking stupid, like, the Southern strategy was a myth and all these other things, and, you know, Republicans aren't racist and everything. Like, it, or better yet, y'all act as if, like, the Southern strategy wasn't a thing and that a lot of Republicans are voting in the ways in which the Democrats voted before, right? Y'all like to say that Martin Luther King Jr. was a Republican. That's debatable. But even if that were true, like, he probably wouldn't still be fucking with y'all now. Right? Like, Republicans are out here fighting against everything that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Was fighting for. And then they act like, but he was one of us, though. Get the fuck out of here, man. That's poll tax. That's to keep people out of the damn ballot box. And y'all know if y'all had, if more people were voting, y'all would lose elections. Bottom line, if more people were voting, Republicans wouldn't stand a chance in hell in winning anything. It's why you institute policies like this. It's why gerrymandering is out of fucking control. As a matter of fact, there was a story here in Michigan where the, I forget which court it was. But basically, in Michigan, the congressional districts, the way they're drawn up here, have been deemed unconstitutional. And they got to rewrite them motherfuckers. They got to redraw them lines before 2020. Right? We just had a ballot measure here in Michigan where, you know, we instead of, you know, the party in power drawing the lines, we've got an independent commission that consists of Republicans, Democrats, and independents to draw the lines going forward. But yeah, man, like Republicans, if they haven't been gaming, like they've been rigging the game for so long that, you know, they've got an oversized amount of power given the amount of people that they truly represent. And so, yeah, man, Florida, Republicans, instituting a poll tax on former felons to keep their asses out of the ballot box. That has been in the news, and that has been our news. All right. Now, our next story, as a matter of fact, damn it, we ain't going to our next door till we acknowledge that we are now in blue blazes.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
Yes, he did. And we are in blue blazes. We talking, you know what, though? You know what? See, here's the thing. I kind of am confused here because I don't know whether or not this is really Blue Blazes or whether or not this is shit.
In the black community, pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk Rite, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special Hotep unit. These are their stories.
You know what? This seems more apropos. This seems more apropos. We're going to read this story here. This comes out of NewJersey.com, right? And we're going to talk about the Hebrew Israelites. And this is one cat. His government name is Jermaine. Jermaine Grant is his government name. But he goes by Chief High Priest Tezakia of the Israelite Church of God in Christ. So they not only Hebrew Israelites, but they Kojic too. Whoo, this is deep. So let's go over here and read this story, man. As a matter of fact, hold on. Before we do this, can I expand this picture? Let me show y'all this dude, man. Cause this is kind of funny. This get up that this dude got on. That's the one thing I do appreciate about the Hebrew Israelite guys, man. Like they be having some rather festive motherfucking costumes, man. Real talk. Like I don't know. they should be looking kind of festive. I mean, I don't know if I'm watching like some, you know, funkadelic shit or what. But let's see. Let me pull that up so you guys can check this out, man. Check out my man, man. Check out my man's headpiece. He got on his glitter and shit. He got the James Brown thing going on, man. All he's missing is the cape. That's all he is missing is the cape. Yeah, man, check him out. Jermaine Grant, Chief High Priest Tazakia, whatever his name is. But yeah, man. So check this out. We're gonna read this story here. Where'd he go? There we go. It says the leader and treasurer of a New York-based Black Hebrew Israelite church admitted in court Wednesday that millions in church money went to the leader of the It said millions in church money went to the proposed leader toward the leader's personal expenses. Jermaine Grant, also known as Chief High Priest Tazakia of the Israelite Church of God in Jesus Christ, pleaded guilty to one count of conspiring to defraud the United States. New Jersey U.S. Attorney Craig Carpentino announced that he announced the plea in a statement Wednesday. Grant, 43, of Burlington Township, enlisted the help of the church's treasurer, Lincoln Warrington, 48, of Bergen County, to use more than $5.3 million in church funds to pay for vacations, luxury items, and private school tuition for Grant's children. Wait, hold up. He did
what?
Federal prosecutors alleged that the men established a company, Black Icon Entertainment, to portray Grant as an entertainment industry mogul and create an illusion of wealth from sources outside the church. But the company was founded almost entirely with money from the church, which preaches that black people are among the lost tribes of Israel, and that Grant, it also preached that the black Jesus will return to earth to enslave and kill white people, leading to a hate group designation from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Through the company alone, Grant and Warrington embezzled $2.4 million, Carpentino said. Grant was also accused of spending an additional $2.9 million of church money on other personal expenses, including rent, chauffeur, luxury cars to take his children to school. So basically, this motherfucker.
Whoa, brother. Now, you got too much dip on your chip.
Man, listen. Meet new pastor. Same as old pastor. Like, I didn't know. Like, see, y'all too motherfucking flamboyant and too loud and too wrong to be out here, like, embezzling the church. Can you imagine, though, like, you thinking that the white man is the devil and the white man is, and Jesus is going to come down and strike down this white man and, like, you know, that whole shit, and this dude is stealing from you and he is your church leader? Can you imagine that? Like, low-key, real talk. And this is something that I've been thinking about. This is something I've been thinking about for a long time. Sometimes with groups like this, a lot of these dudes are looking for some acknowledgement. A lot of them are looking for some level of prestige. A lot of them are looking for a level of respect. And they get in groups like this, and then they give themselves these titles, right? These audacious titles to make them feel like they somebody. And then to go with that title, you feel like, okay, well, with this title should come certain responsibilities. With this title should come certain privileges. With this title should come the spoils of someone important. And so you get a motherfucker like this dude who is calling himself the high priest, the chief high priest. His name is Jermaine. Nigga, your name is Jermaine. Chief high priest, these nuts. Man, man, man. When the black church, the black Hebrew Israelites are getting fooled for like $5.3 million from one of their church leaders, man. You thought you was safe over there. Your ass ain't. Something about, man. I don't know. I'm at a loss on this one. But yeah, like I said, I was confused at first, but this is especially
in the black community. Pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk Rite, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special Hotep unit. These are their stories.
All right, now another story. This is some Blue Blazer shit for real, man. I'm going to need y'all to sit down for this one. Like, for real. I'm going to need y'all to have a seat. Think about this, because I know it's going to be a lot of barbecues coming up. You know, spring, the weather is finally trying to break. Barbecues is coming up, you know. People going out to the picnics in the parks and whatnot. You know, they, you know, just trying to enjoy, you know, this time of the year, you know. And part of that is the barbecue and the food that you eat when it's warm outside. But some doctors then found themselves putting the USDA in their crosshairs because apparently, man, it's a lot of doo-doo on your fish and chicken. A lot of doo-doo on your fish and chicken. And yeah, that's just nasty. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of Fox2Detroit.com. It says, get ready for some news that's gross but true. It's legal for your meat to have trace amounts of fecal matter. Now, a nonprofit group of doctors want to change that. They filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The lawsuit filed on Tuesday by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine argues that the government's zero-tolerance policy for fecal contamination only applies to visible matter, allowing feces that you can't see with the naked eye to pass inspection. So check this out, man. How many of y'all got them people? How many of y'all like, hey, man, don't worry about it, man. Just cook it long enough, man. It'll kill all the bacteria and everything off there. Just go on here, let it cook. You got to cook it at 400 degrees, man. 400 degrees, 3 hours, kill all that shit, man. Y'all out here eating doo-doo turds, man. Y'all out here eating turds on your chicken. Can't even have a steak. Now, you really like your steak rare? I don't know, man. You might want to rethink this. And this is something, too. I think vegans are probably like sitting on like, I told these motherfuckers they ain't listen. I told them. They ain't want to listen. it says they want a new warning label added to chicken and other meat, alerting customers to the possibility that their meat may contain fecal matter. According to the group statement, the USDA misleads customers every time an inspector slaps a wholesome label on contaminated food, says Deborah Dubow, President Esquire, Press Esquire. Okay. Associate General Counsel for the Physicians Committee, who authored the lawsuit. Consumers should be horrified to know that USDA standard for wholesomeness is no visible feces. The lawsuit comes 6 years after the group of 12,000 doctors filed a petition asking the department to require the industry to disclose the presence of feces on chicken and other meats. The USDA has not responded to the petition, the group said. So, yeah, man, maybe you want to go to a halal butcher or a kosher butcher. Maybe it's a little bit, you know, better. I don't know. May cost you a little bit more, but would you pay a little bit more to not eat shit? I probably would. But yes, that is in Blue Blazes, man. Doo-doo on the meat, man. God damn. That's crazy as hell. Oh, man. So, yeah, check this out. Y'all know I am a purveyor of the reality TV variety, man. I am a connoisseur of ratchetness when it comes to the Love and Hip Hops and the Black Inks. And I even watch the Real Housewives, you know, only the ATL ones, though. I don't really fuck with the rest of them. But the ATL Housewives, man, I fuck with it. But yo, man, Remy Ma. Remy Ma has been in the news a little bit. She apparently, man, lost her shit, socked one of the other ones, you know, one of these other girls that's on the show, socked her in the face.
What?
I said Remy Ma socked some girl in the face.
What?
You heard me, you motherfucker. All right, so we're going to read this story here. This comes out of TheRoop.com. It says, since her release from prison in 2014, all the way up rapper Remy Ma has gone to great lengths to rehabilitate her image. She's become invaluable to VH1's Love and Hip Hop empire. She's joined husband Papoose in becoming the unofficial brand ambassadors for Black Love. And she co-hosts the popular talk show State of the Culture with Joe Budden, Scotty Beam, and Brandon Jinx Jenkins on Revolt TV. But if shocking reports that she assaulted Brittany Taylor, her Love and Hip Hop New York co-star, are true, the 38-year-old's efforts to move beyond her violent past could all be for naught. TMZ reports that Remy is being accused of punching Taylor in the eye during the Pretty Lou benefit concert on April 16th at New York City's Irving Plaza, an accusation that Taylor confirmed herself in a subsequent video she posted to her 315,000 Instagram followers. Well, let's see. Is there a video attached to this? Let's see if there's a... Can we watch this? Come on, load up. Let's act like we're trying to do some shit today, computer. All right. Oh, shit. They done removed it from the gram. All right. So we're going to read it. We're going to continue to read it. It says, I didn't want to bring it to social media, and I'm using a content. Yeah, I'll use ad blockers. Leave me alone. I didn't want to bring it to social media because it's pretty embarrassing and it's not a good look, she wrote in the post caption, showcasing a clearly visible black eye. I tried to cover it up with makeup and move on, but that still didn't work. My question is, Remy Ma, why did you really do this? In TMZ's report, Taylor claims words were exchanged backstage in the concert's green room prior to Remy assaulting her. The impetus for their strife was reportedly an attack that occurred weeks ago on Remy's stepdaughter, Dejanay. After seeking treatment at a nearby hospital, Taylor reported the incident to authorities, triggering an investigation by the New York City Police Department. No charges have been filed and no arrests have been made, but Taylor has hired an attorney, Sanford Rubenstein, and intends to prosecute, according to the New York Daily News. If Taylor's allegations are proven to be true, Remy could be in some serious trouble. After serving 6 years in prison for a 2007 attempted murder charge, he's currently on parole. Remy has yet to comment on the matter, but we'll keep you updated as the story develops. So, if I'm going to be 100% honest with y'all, I doubt that girl really got hit in the eye. I doubt that Remy Ma is going to jail. I watched too much of this shit to know that a lot of they building up the storyline for the next season of the show, man. Nobody's really fucked with like that. And I don't know if it's like healthy for me to have that level of cynicism concerning this particular story, because, you know, you don't want anybody, especially somebody of Remy Ma's, you know, stature as of late. You don't want somebody like that to go back to jail after everything she's tried to do to kind of like stay out of trouble and, you know, rehabilitate her life and image and everything else. But for her to go back to jail for something as petty as what they are reporting this to be, that would really be fucked up. Never really be fucked up. I sincerely believe that this is nothing more than the plot line to the next time we see them on Love and Hip Hop. Now, I know Brittany Taylor wasn't on Love and Hip Hop New York this past season, but I'm sure this is going to come up as a plot line going forward for Love and Hip Hop New York next year. Mark my words, man. You heard it right here on the Span Report podcast. You heard it here first, nigga, on April 26th. You heard it here first. It's going to be on the show. Yeah, but, Oh man, I'm clowning. But this has been Blue Blazes.
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say Blue Blazes?
Now, y'all know, right after we leave Blue Blazes, we kind of do something like this here.
That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me, and I gladly. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
All right. White folks love that shit, man. I swear they do. But we're going to proud to be an American. The first story of proud to be an American, man, is the fact that, Washington, D.C. has been all over, like, social media and on the news with a lot of the gentrification that has been happening in that town, man. Chocolate City is turning into Neapolitan real motherfucking fast over there. And one particular incident, or this one particular situation, involves Howard University and the fact that there's a lot of people who just moved in around Howard who are acting as if they got more access to Howard than they should rightfully. And one of them suggested that Howard University move their goddamn campus. And we do have video attached to this, so we're going to pull this video up so you guys can watch with us here in the chat room. Let me pull that up, and let's see what these people are talking about.
This is heating up on social media and on campus, on the yard behind me. The university is silent so far about its official stance, but students have plenty to say, accusing neighboring residents of using the yard, which is the heartbeat of Howard University's campus, as an outdoor gym or a place to walk their dog. In fact, we're told in recent weeks, some students have taken matters into their own hands and confronted area residents they deem to be disrespecting the campus. Fox 5 was out here on the yard and did not see any non-students on campus. In fact, the only dog walker we saw appeared to be a student. Howard University is a private school, although parts of its campus are intertwined with the district. Several neighborhoods surrounding Howard have undergone recent redevelopment, attracting new, wealthy residents. Residents and students say have shown disregard for the yard's historical significance.
The yard is for the students, and although everyone loves pets, I feel like it's disrespectful to have the pets just running around, especially when there are several parks around here. If they come on the yard and they're just walking through, I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but I still feel like there are other ways to get around D.C. without having to cut through a college campus.
They're in part of D.C., so they have to work within D.C. If they don't want to be within D.C., then move the campus.
I think we need to work together, and I don't think it should be a he or they or here. It's our community, and that's how it should be.
Again, how...
So they calling that man there gentrifying George, right? The audacity, my nigga. The caucasity of this dude suggesting that a school that has been there for damn near 150 years move because you want to walk your dog through there and let him do his business. And, like, you know, it's funny, man. This is something that I didn't really necessarily worry about until, like, I moved into a house. And I would see sometimes, like, neighbors, you know, they would walk their dogs and shit. And, like, you would see, like, a dog, you know, dogs tend to gravitate towards the grass when they got to, you know, go ahead and do their thing. They're not really apt to really do it on the sidewalk. But, like, I've seen it, man, where people would let their dog go into your yard, take a shit, and keep fucking walking. Keep walking, man. So, I don't know if, like, that was happening on Howard University's campus. Probably so. But the fact that, like, that was the attitude, that was the response to the concerns of the students and of the college that, yo, you don't like it, well, you should move, as if they have, as if they weren't there longer than you. In much the same way that they were talking about the go-go music at the cell phone store, where, like, white residents just suddenly moved in, they should have been aware of what was happening in that neighborhood prior to moving in, and then you move in, and now you want to complain about the shit, when this was something that was going on long before your ass got there, right? Now, apparently, Howard has decided that they are no longer allowing people who aren't students or employees of the school to walk through their campus. Like, it's private property, low key. You know what I'm saying? Like the fact that, you know, it's within city limits and it's in an urban area doesn't mean that you just have carte blanche over the shit. Like, I remember going to Tennessee State. It's in Nashville. Nashville is like a booming ass town right now, but you didn't just see locals just walking through the motherfucker like that. Like, it was mostly students and shit like that, especially the main campus. Now, the downtown campus might have been something entirely different, but the main campus, like, yo, you didn't really see a whole lot of locals just, like, you know, lingering around and shit. Now, it's been a long time since I've been down to school, but yeah, I don't know how much of that could have changed because it was in the hood. Tennessee State was right in the hood. But yeah, man, like, this is amazing. Just another example of Americans not really being as American towards other Americans, not really respecting those Americans' right to exist and to live and be happy and free and stuff like that within their own shit. Like, you know, you talk about the freedom of property, freedom and all that. Yeah, you're not respecting their property, man. This is my shit. This is our shit. You might want to take your dog and let him go shit someplace else. And I love dogs. That don't mean I'm gonna let you. I need to let you bring your strange dog into my yard and let them do whatever the fuck they want to do. Nah, that's not what's gonna happen, and it shouldn't happen. But yeah, that has been up and down my timeline over the course of the week, and I kind of wanted to speak to it a little bit. Another story that is in the news. Well, this is proud to be an American, and this is something that I think is one of the reasons is one of the reasons why I no longer really go to church. Like, I've never. I do believe in God. I know, like, I'm not necessarily as, I just don't go to church much anymore. I don't really have an appetite for it. I think the environment sometimes, as uplifting as it can be for a lot of people, I myself find the environment sometimes toxic. And yeah, I'm just going to read from this story, man. This comes out of WKYC.com. As a matter of fact, I believe this video associated with this particular story as well, and I would much rather they speak to it so that I can, you know, yeah, there is video. So let me pull this up.
Well, now a story out of the Akron area where a mother...
Just a second. Let me pull this up so you guys can watch this right along with me. Uh-oh. I didn't realize that that was muted. So check this out. Here we go.
Mother says the pastor at her children's private school won't let them return because he believes she's living in sin. Our Ray Strickland talked to both of them tonight.
It's not that they should not go to the school, it's that they cannot go to school.
Summer Grant's kids, Samara and Samaya, were fourth and second graders here at Chapel Hill Christian School. They've been going there for years. She says they are being kicked out not because of behavior issues, but because administrator Pastor John Wilson believes Grant is living in sin.
He said it was many reasons, and the main one was because I was not married and my children had different fathers.
Grant recorded their conversation last Thursday.
There's 10 commandments, and that's where you find those, and that committing adultery is not part of that.
Grant says Pastor Wilson has criticized her marital status before. She says during a conference in July, he also questioned why her kids had three different fathers. Grant says he gave her this list of 8 recommendations to improve her life.
Not right. As a Christian, you're not supposed to judge, and you shouldn't affect these kids' education over that.
She says her kids have never been suspended. They're great students. One of the only times was a misunderstanding with the bus driver last week, an incident she says Pastor Wilson says had little to do with his decision.
It's just not right. It's just not right.
Pastor Wilson declined to go on camera, but sent us this statement. He says parents sign a written agreement to reflect the commitment to Christ. Pastor Wilson says the Grant family acted in a manner inconsistent with that agreement. He didn't want to go into specifics, but says the dismissal was necessary in order to protect the safety of our children and their families.
So let me get this straight. You put these kids out of school because you thought that these kids presented a safety risk to everyone else in the school, right? There's something like wrong in just this entire, there's something insidious about this sort of judgment, this sort of ostracization of a young woman and her children, right? And it's one of the things where, like, you know, we talk about, you know, the religious right and everything. You know, it's interesting how they want religious freedom, right? They want the freedom to practice their religion in the way they see fit. However, they want their religion to be unimpeded. They want to be able to practice it in the ways in which they want to practice it. However, one of the things about being a Christian is I thought that the goal of being a Christian was to be Christ-like. And I find it very hard to believe that Christ would kick a young woman's children out of school because those children were born out of wedlock, right? Those children did not ask to be here. No matter how they got here, they're here. And so to take their access to their education from them because you didn't necessarily agree with the way their mother had been living. Now, I don't understand, like, one of the questions that I do have is whether or not those kids were, well, for one, whether or not those kids were born out of wedlock before they were enrolled into the school, right? So you already enrolled these kids into the school, but at the same time, you're using this as a cudgel, or you're using this to somehow deem their mother unfit. Meanwhile, she's bringing her kids to you. She's entrusting her kids to you to educate her kids. You know how much trust a person has to have to entrust their children to someone else? And then for you to judge that woman because those kids don't have the same father? That's crazy. And you want me, this is the reason why so many people no longer fuck with the church. This is the reason. And it's funny, man, like the church, Christians, religious right, They keep talking about how Muslims want Sharia law when y'all practicing some Sharia-like fucking tactics right here in the U.S. of A. How could this be any different than a Muslim saying that, well, like, you know, we don't really appreciate our women, you know, wearing certain clothes. You have to be all the way, you have to be all the way covered up, right? Now I know that's within Islam, a lot of women who are very devout, they do that voluntarily, and I have no beef with that whatsoever. But it's just weird how that, like, how Christians try to juxtapose themselves as if what they're doing is better than that. And you try to demonize those people and say that those people are trying to bring Sharia law. That's a form of Sharia right there. Now, what you call it something different is entirely something, you know, that is something else. You know, you can talk about the Ten Commandments and whatnot. It's like, yeah, y'all suspend those commandments whenever the fuck it is y'all feel like. It's why I call a lot of people, you know, like those types of Christians, cafeteria Christians. You just kind of pick and choose off the menu which of these commandments you're going to follow today. And then you ask for forgiveness later on because you know you're going to break that commandment again. But, you know, God got me. You know, he know my heart. Come on, man. This is bullshit. This is bullshit.
Grant, she is hoping the pastor changes his mind, not for her, but for her kids.
They don't have a school. And that's really why I'm doing this, because they don't have anywhere to go to school right now.
And this mother says all of this couldn't have come at a worse time. Her kids have about 30 days left of school. And Sarah, their last day was about a week ago.
All right. We will keep an eye on this one. Frank, thanks very much.
All right. So, yeah, man, that's in motherfucking Blue Blazers. That shit just pissed me off. But, yeah, we got another story in Blue Blazers. And this one involves militia leaders in New Mexico. And we're going to read this story here. This comes out of the WashingtonPost.com. It says an armed militia was detaining migrants at the border. The FBI just arrested its motherfucking leader. Let's see. It says the leader of an armed militia that scours the southern border for undocumented migrants was arrested by the FBI Saturday, days after a video of the group holding migrants against their will sparked outrage. Larry Mitchell Hopkins, 69, was arrested in the New Mexico border city of Sunland Park on charges of being a felon in possession of firearms and ammunition, the FBI said. The charges stem from the discovery of weapons at Hopkins' residence in 2017 after the FBI received a tip about alleged militia extremist activity connected to Hopkins. According to a federal court complaint that was unsealed Monday, Elizabeth Martinez, a spokeswoman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Mexico, declined to comment on the long delay in charging Hopkins. Hopkins leads the United Constitutional Patriots, or UCP, one of several militias that have taken up to patrolling the U.S.-Mexico border. The patrols have been prompted by a recent surge in caravans of Central American migrants and emboldened by President Trump's assertion that the arrivals constitute an invasion. The militia's stated objective is to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America and to protect citizens' rights against all enemies, both foreign and domestic, which mimics the oath of enlistment taken by U.S. service members. The FBI said that it found 9 guns when it searched Hopkins' home in November 2017, including a 12-gauge shotgun, long rifles, and handguns. Hopkins told agents at the time that the woman with whom he was living owned the weapons. The FBI said it had been given information that Hopkins had allegedly made the statement that the United Constitutional Patriots were training to assassinate George Soros, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama. Hopkins appeared in court Monday for a brief appearance and continues to be held in custody ahead of a detention hearing next week. His attorney, Kelly O'Connell, a former conservative radio host, of course, in New Mexico, questioned the timing of the charges against Hopkins in a brief phone interview. The main takeaway is this was not about anything down at the border, O'Connell said. If it was a very serious charge worthy of prosecution and incarceration, why not jump on it immediately? So check this out. If you know that your client is a felon and is barred from owning any firearms or living in a home where firearms are present, why are you worried about the timing of this particular charge? Now, your client had been arrested and shown on video detaining migrants for being illegal. as a lot of, you know, on the right would say, these people are illegal aliens. They're invading the United States of America, and we have a sovereign right to protect our borders and all this other bullshit that y'all, you know, y'all kind of indoctrinate yourselves with. But I find it highly ironic that a motherfucker who ain't even supposed to be in like even the same room as somebody with a firearm knowingly has the audacity to be holding people hostage, detaining people unlawfully, and acting as though he has legal authority to do so. Nigga, that is the height of white privilege. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if, like, say, for, what if the Black Panthers, right? What if the Black Panthers was like, yo, doing patrols, I don't know, on, like, the, you know, the black side of town or whatever, and some white person, like, just, you know, just, you know, not even really paying much attention, roll themselves into the black part of town, and they get rolled down on some brothers with some AR-15s, a couple shotguns, and they in a Tahoe or some shit like that, and they're like, yo, man, what the fuck y'all doing over here? Yeah, y'all can't be around here. Y'all crossing into our land right now. We gonna hold y'all right. We gonna hold y'all here until our leaders come. Can you imagine what that would be like? Can you imagine how soon the motherfucking FBI and ATF and everybody would be swooping down on them niggas? Could you imagine that? These dudes are operating as a goddamn militia, man. They go down like, yo, we gonna detain these goddamn Mexicans and these damn immigrants, man. We gotta keep these motherfuckers the bottom of our country, man. We gotta take America back. We want our country back. We gotta take, from who, nigga? It wasn't yours to begin with. Oh, man, it says the United Constitutional Patriots came to public attention this month after the emergence of videos that showed men stopping and detaining people crossing the border. In an April 16th video posted to Facebook by a woman who goes by Debbie Collins Farnsworth, a large group of migrants, including several children, were seen sitting on the ground and huddled together in the darkness, some of their faces illuminated by flashlights. This is crazy. Everybody totally crazy. A voice that appeared to be Farnsworth and narrated as she walked the perimeter of the group, claiming that it consisted of hundreds of people. I don't know what to say about this other than the fact that it's got to stop, she said. A few minutes into the 45-minute live video, Border Patrol officers arrived and ordered the migrants to sit down before telling them to begin walking. The migrants were shepherded through the night by Border Patrol officers while Farnsworth followed behind. It says adults walked past holding children's hands. See the way that they hold their hands? I don't think those are their kids, honestly. They got grips on their wrists. It's crazy. Farnsworth's video had garnered more than 100,000 views and 2,700 shares as of Sunday afternoon. The militia has maintained that its actions are legal, though Sunland Park Police Chief Javier Guerra told BuzzFeed News that he explicitly informed the group that they are not. And yet they operate. Those are kidnapping charges, man. You can't hold somebody against their will at gunpoint, man. Those are kidnapping charges. And if there were hundreds of people within that, you know how many? That's hundreds of kidnapping charges that you are subject to. Now, whether or not they get charged with all of that is something entirely different. But it's amazing to me that this is like, you know, this goes on. And there's a segment of the population, you know, one half of the political party here in America, or the political apparatus here in America, who thinks that this is totally acceptable and this is okay. And that's why that shit isn't proud to be a motherfucking American. That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. All right, that's enough of that shit. And Denise James writes in and says the local government has the same mentality and Border Patrol has the same mentality, so they were protected. Yeah, it's exactly right. It's exactly why they're able to operate with that level of impunity, where like even the felon, the dude is a felon, the leader of the group is a felon, and yet he's surrounded by all these firearms like it ain't a thing. You know what I'm saying? Like I had that's the other part about this, right? So my brother, my brother was let out of prison last year, right? And as you guys know, I own firearms, quite a few, and there was a thing where my brother could not be in my home. My brother could not be in my car with me if I had firearms present. If I wanted my brother to come to my home, I had to remove every firearm out of my house. If I wanted to go pick my brother up to do anything, I could not carry my weapon on me. Whether he knew about it or not, he would be in trouble for that shit. So the fact that this dude is out here operating with a militia, and he's kidnapping migrants, and he's just now being arrested for the shit. Good God, the caucasity. Because I couldn't imagine putting my brother in that position. I couldn't imagine doing it. So yeah, that's crazy. But we're almost towards the end of the show. And of course, y'all know, before we go, we always go out like this.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
And our ass hat of the week is none other than some dude named Duncan Hunter. Now, we've heard of Duncan Hunter before. As a matter of fact, I think this is Duncan's second time being the ass head of the week this week here. The second time he's been ass head of the week here at the Spirit Report podcast. And the reason why Duncan Hunter, who is a California representative, he's a rep, House of Representatives congressman. The reason why is because he... Oh, man, just to show you the depravity of what's happening to the Republican Party, man. This dude decided that he was going to do a video to show you how easy it was to cross the American border from Mexico. Only he didn't cross the border at all. Oh, shit. But here's the thing, though. You mad at these Mexicans supposedly crossing the border, but you doing it for, like, likes and shit on Facebook. And this is your attitude.
Oh, that was different.
Yeah, that's your attitude. We're going to read. Do they have a video? Let's see. Please show me the. Please tell me we got the video. Please tell me we got the video. Come on, Newsweek. Come through for your boy. That's a screenshot of the video. It's not the video. So we're just going to read here from Newsweek, man. Let me read this story. It says, Congressman Duncan Hunter is in hot water again. The California Republican, who was indicted in August for allegedly misusing campaign funds, courted controversy this past week, and he posted a video that showed him scaling what he called the Grand Border Wall between the U.S. and Mexico. The problem? The San Diego native wasn't actually crossing the border. He was still at least 75 feet away from it, according to U.S. Customs and Border Protection. So here's the Grand Border Wall in Yuma, Arizona, Hunter said in the video, pointing toward a low barrier shrouded in darkness. This is what we expect to stop people. Transnational terrorists, families, all illegal aliens coming from across the border. This is it. It looks pretty tough to cross, he continued. Let me see if I can do it. The video then shows Hunter swing his legs over the low fence and stand firmly on the other side. There we go, he says in the clip. That's how easy it is to cross the border in Yuma, Arizona. A Customs and Border Protection spokesperson told the Times of San Diego that the barrier Hunter climbed was, in fact, a vehicle barrier located in the U.S. about 75 to 100 feet from the actual divided line between the two countries. A spokesperson for Duncan could not immediately be reached for comment. Democratic challenger Amara Campa Najjar, who is aiming to unseat Hunter in one of the most conservative districts in California, pointed out the errors in a series of mocking tweets. Can Hunter's spokesperson please show him a map? He wrote. He also needs to be shown the Colorado River, which is a secondary barrier he needs to cross to get to Mexico. As it happens, the geographic flub may ultimately prove to be better than the alternative for the congressman, who would have violated his bail agreement had he actually stepped foot in Mexico. Let's read that again. The geographic flub may ultimately prove to be better than the alternative for the congressman, who would have violated his bail agreement had he actually stepped foot in Mexico. Because again, this dude was arrested for misappropriating campaign funds. This is why we was talking about this asshat the first time. Right? So he knew exactly what he was doing. This is the thing. He knew what the fuck he was doing. He knew damn well, hey, I can't lead the country. I can't do that. But if we can stage this to make it look like I was, you know, leaving the country or crossing the border, we might be able to grab some support. We might be able to, you know, grab some votes. We might be able to kind of, you know, tack on to this issue that is important to the voters in our district. But I can't really actually do that. So let's stage this here. They think y'all stupid. And unfortunately, some of y'all are proving them to be right. So because Duncan Hunter staged this ridiculous ass stunt, Duncan Hunter is the asshat of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast. And the only thing I got to say to this nigga right here is,
nigga, please.
That shit is stupid. But yeah, man, that has been our asshat of the week. But of course, we do have a champ.
The champ is here. The champ is here. The champ is here.
Now, champ of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast is someone who goes nameless. But they did a very big thing this week. They did a tremendous thing this week. And we're grateful for what they did. The champ of the week this week is whoever it was that flipped the switch on John William King, who murdered James Byrd Jr. by dragging him by the neck for 2 miles, decapitating him in a hate crime back in 1998. So we're going to read this story here. This comes out of the New York Times. It says that Texas executes white supremacists for 1998 dragging death of James Byrd Jr. It says John William King, convicted 2 decades ago for killing James Byrd Jr. in an act of unfathomable racist brutality in the small town of Jasper, Texas, was put to death by the state of Texas on Wednesday night with a disposal with a dose of pentobarbital. The execution carried out by the state's death chamber in Huntsville came after the United States Supreme Court turned down Mr. King's last petition for a stay. He was pronounced dead at 7:08 p.m., said Jeremy Diesel, the spokesperson for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Mr. King kept his eyes closed while witnesses arrived to the execution chamber on Wednesday. The Associated Press reported when the prison warden, Bill Lewis, asked him if he had any final words. Mr. King said no. Mr. King made a final statement issued in writing. Mr. Diesel said, capital punishment. Them without the capital get the punishment, it said. Early in Sunday morning in 1998, Mr. King and 2 other white men attacked Mr. Byrd, a 49-year-old black man, who had been offered a ride home in a sinister gesture of neighborliness. The men beat him, spray-painted his face, chained him to the back of a pickup truck, and dragged him to his death in an isolated back road. The motive seemed shockingly clear-cut. Mr. King, who had come out of a stint in prison, was a committed white supremacist. His body a billboard of racist tattoos, including one depicting the black man hanged in a noose. Luvon Harris, a sister of Mr. Byrd's, who planned to attend the execution, said on Tuesday that Mr. King's death by lethal injection would not compare to the way he had tortured her brother. He's not going through any pain, she said. He's not chained and bound and dragged on a concrete road, swinging back and forth like a sack of potatoes, with an arm coming off and being decapitated or nothing like that. He died a very peaceful fucking death. Not like the way in which James Byrd was killed. Very peaceful. Much more humane than I would have allowed. I have to say that. However, whoever it was who flipped the switch on this sack of shit, cheers. And you are the champ of the week this week here at the Spare and Poor Podcast, man. Real motherfucking talk. But it is time for us to get on up out of here. But of course, before we do, I got to remind you guys how to get in touch with us here at the Spare and Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can go ahead and hit us up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. I will play them on the show and respond in kind. And if you're watching us next time live, you can call into the show and be a part of this thing here that we do here at the Spare and Report Podcast, right? You can also email us here at feedback@thespareandreport.com. That's feedback@thespareandreport.com. Leave me those email messages, and of course, I will read those emails here live on the show and respond here to you on the show as well. You can also follow your boy Span on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span, so go ahead and follow me there. Chop it up with your mans throughout the week. You can also hit me up on these iTunes and Stitcher reviews, man. Leave those 5-star reviews on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Those 5-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. We really do appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. It's one way to help the show grow. It doesn't cost you any money. Just 2 minutes of your time to let anybody know, like, yo, man, I fuck with that. I like that show. I really do. So, yeah, man, everybody who does that, man, we really do appreciate that. 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher Radio get read here live on the show. And for all your Spare Report needs, go to www.thespareandreport.com. You can go there. You can watch replays of the show. You can watch the show live from there as well, because we do embed the code there, so you can watch the shows live at the website. But you can vote in the polls there. You can leave comments there. You can donate to the show as often as you like, as much as you like. And of course, we appreciate every dime over here at the Spare and Poor Podcast Network. And you can go to our store from there. You can get yourself a t-shirt. You can get yourself a coffee mug or like a water bottle or something. You can get yourself a mouse pad or a little tote bag or whatnot. We got some stuff over there for you, man. We got some more stuff coming. But yeah, you can get you some stuff over there at the Spare Report Podcast Network store over at TeePublic. But that link is over available at www.thespareandreport.com. But it is time for us to go. And yeah, man, going to see Avengers Endgame tonight. It's going to be epic. Oh, man, let me get on up out of here. I will talk to you guys again soon. But until next time, fam. Oh, shit, you didn't get your shirts yet. Let me hit up Cliff and let him know, because he said he sent that off. But, yeah, I'm going to hit him up, Tanisha. I'm going to hit him up. But thank you for watching the show live, and I will talk to you guys again soon. But until next time, fam, peace.